Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Oh, wow, we did that really well. Anyway, the telephone number is to call in here if you would like to comment or question us or put us on the rack and interrogate us or whatever you want to do. Are 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else.
You have a very concerned look on your face.
Yes, I had a news site open, and it started playing a video in my ears.
Oh.
Got my headset on, and I'm listening to you talk, and right in the middle of it, I wish there was some way these news sites could let you tell it, just don't play. I just want to read it.
Yes, one of the things that indicates that we're becoming old fuddy-duddies is that when I go to a news site in what is purported to be a newspaper,
right,
like the Wall Street Journal, and I open something I want to read, suddenly having a video jump in front of me with an advert. It always start with an advertisement,
right,
and loud noises and fast movement just kind of makes me go to the Financial Times.
Yes. This is very common for me to take a break at the office to check on some of the economic news going on somewhere in the world.
Is that why they call it breaking news?
Yes, breaking news.
Okay.
I'm taking a break at the office to read it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I'll step away from, or step away figuratively speaking, from an analysis in progress, and I'll pull up a site to see how something's, what trends are going on in the economic cycles, and something will pop up with a, you know, Viagra commercial or something, and I'm like,
something will pop up with a Viagra commercial.
Oh, yeah. Well,
we need
that's
to analyze
how I meant
that.
It, but yes. For those of you wondering, we're not just a radio program. We're
what?
Also,
really?
It's true. We're also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm, or at least two of us are the principals there.
Yes, the Personal Wealth Coach is, in fact, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm in the metropolis of Salado, Texas.
And I have been asked, why do we do the radio show? Why do we do the radio program?
By me, among other people.
Yes, and I've asked it as well, and we don't get paid for this.
I don't know. I don't know why we would.
No, and
they couldn't afford to pay us. Probably.
And we don't. Besides the disclosures that we give, we don't give advertising to ourselves on this program. It's a choice that we've made. This is something that we've decided to do based on the fact that our education system seems to be sorely lacking when it comes to investments.
Our education system, like your and mine?
Yeah, well, yeah, like we had one.
Right.
We didn't have an education.
Actually,
forget
we,
this.
We do have one.
Yes, rather big ones. And unfortunately, the normal public school system and most people's jobs don't have them exposed in any way to what they're supposed to do with their investments. So that's why we do it. We don't get paid to do this, so we come out. How many years have we been doing this since? You've been doing it since 97. I joined you in 98. So that's at least three centuries that we've been doing this. And
well, we've been doing it in two different centuries, in two different millennia.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so we have a caller on 773-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all?
You're frightening me every time you say that.
But you call us gentlemen.
We seem to be doing well. How are you today, sir?
Well, I woke up, and at my age, that makes it a good day.
Congratulations.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I want to run something by you. As you know, I've told you, I admire your optimism, but
you admire our
announcement by Walmart is a harbinger of things to come, and I'll tell you why. I think that
uh-huh.
And listen to what you, how you react to it.
Okay.
While I agree with you that there is growing pent-up demand, I also think that folks just don't have any money. Or those who do have a little money are psychologically now conditioned to realize that people who are fortunate enough to have a job haven't seen a raise in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's a psychological barrier.
I completely agree with you. I don't know that there's any disagreement between us at all.
Okay. Well, I'm not done yet.
Okay.
I see the implications of that as follows. The stock market, which in my view is slightly overpriced, in your view is heavily underpriced, is likely for the next 3 to 6 months to be on a downward trajectory as people begin to realize that they're not going to get rich.
Well, I've got a semi-agreement here.
I think he may not be finished.
Okay.
Are you finished?
No. And because of that, and layer onto that situation as it exists today, the likely government issues that are going to come up, and somewhere in the near future, we're going to get a new Fed chairman who may or may not be willing to continue QE3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that economic activity is going to take a hit.
Mm-hmm.
The market's going to take a hit.
Okay.
People are going to start getting real, real nervous.
Can I interject something here?
No, I'm essentially done that. Yeah.
Okay. Can I interject?
Sure.
I am not a pessimist by nature, but I don't feel good about the next 3 to 6 months.
A bull market climbs a wall of worry.
Believe me, I understand that. I have profited from that on several occasions.
And we have a wall of worry in front of us as steep as any I've seen in a long time. And that would suggest that we're in a bull market.
Okay.
And during, by the way, as far as 3 to 6 months is concerned, man, have I read a lot of good studies on the ability to forecast what the market's going to do over the next 3 to 6 months. And I've come to the conclusion that whatever my conclusion is more likely wrong than right, whatever my conclusion
now,
is.
Now, we have over the past year been talking about large cap value positions being probably overpriced.
Okay. Well, not value, but just large
cap large
stocks.
Large cap stocks. So basically, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has run off and left everything else behind. The S&P 500 has had some of that, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average is overpriced right now. I'm not saying long-term overpriced. I am saying for the current environment, it is overpriced. The last week we've seen it drop 2.2%. It's about 600 points total that has come down in the past week. That's not a surprise. What's going on? You said Harbinger, Walmart, and just as a side note, Harbinger is for those listeners out there that like our geekiness, that word comes from Herr Berger, which is the Mr. A master who owns lodgings and the old armies.
But that's spelled H-E-R-R, not H-A-I-R.
Great. Okay. Right, correct. So he's someone who was sent ahead of an army to get lodgings. And when that Harbinger came back and said, there are no rooms ahead, it was a signal that the army was going to have to sleep outside. So this is a very good use of that statement. Now, Walmart has had some interesting returns on it. There are areas in Walmart that are doing very well, and there's areas of Walmart that aren't doing very well. And one of the reasons that Walmart has taken a hit, or a hit comparatively, is because it moved into produce, fresh produce, in a very aggressive sense. And that's traditionally not been its area. People do not traditionally, that your normal person that goes to Walmart, and there are people that are very clearly defined in that group. There's an economic group of people that are defined by Walmart. They have a tendency to not buy produce at Walmart. And when they aren't getting paid in a way that is expected to go up, they tend to buy more prepackaged food. So part of this is Walmart's decision, an untimely decision, because of much media attention. Media was focusing on the fact that they're not selling green vegetables and fresh fruits. Well, Walmart made the decision to move into that in a very aggressive way. That is not, the timing on that was not good. And that's part of the reason why the earnings were hit this time around.
Since you mentioned that, it's it's a part of my thinking that I didn't mention earlier. And I'm not talking about Walmart, but for all, what gains we've seen in earnings have been related more to productivity than to anything else.
Yes, and that is correct. The numbers came out this. Yep, that's exactly what's going on.
Okay, so if the top line isn't growing, it isn't likely to grow, and you used up whatever benefits you accrued from more efficiencies, then it's likely to see earnings season that's going to be disappointing.
The trend that usually happens here when you have earnings growth based on productivity is that as more productivity happens, if there's enough cash flow, and this is one of the issues that we keep coming back to. I know you refer to us as optimists, but the Federal Reserve has a major impact here.
Oh, yeah.
New study just came out. Over the last year, half of the new home purchases, were done with 100% cash. That is not good for earnings growth. That is not good for wages growth because we're not creating money. People are afraid right now of inflation, that QE3 is going to cause inflation. Until loans start getting made by banks, we're not going to have anything but a deflationary trend. It's right now, and that's the issue that is the, you know, we can talk about Walmart being the signal of things to come, but if we look at home purchases, I think that's the place that you see it even before Walmart.
Let me make a comment on this whole thing. First off, there's a sub, bad news sells papers.
Yeah.
So Walmart's relatively low, you know, Walmart didn't do poorly. Walmart's earnings grew. Walmart's bottom line and top line grew. It just didn't grow as much as the analysts said. So, okay, that's terrible. Well, I don't, you know, basically, when we see the store that is most notable for selling to the bottom level of the socioeconomic chain has growth in earnings, but it's not quite as fast as the analysts thought, and that makes headlines, what that tells me is we have a slow news week. By the way, the drop in the market this week occurred largely on a comment that a Federal Reserve Board person made in Paducah, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Which tells you a lot about what's going on in the world right now. The other thing is the housing starts were reported up 5.9%.
Right. That is great news.
But let me all these things occur on the same day. And the other thing that came in on that same day, that was Thursday, was that new unemployment claims are the lowest they have been since 2007. In other words, frankly, that's all good news. So, of course, the market dropped. And what we're seeing in the market is very, very, very typical August behavior when the major players are out on vacation and the minor players, anytime there's economic news, sell something.
Yes, I know. And that is absolutely true.
And so Kohl's things are up. Now, that didn't make the headlines. Kohl's is not Walmart. It is a step above Walmart. And what that says to me is just a confirmation of what's going on in the rest of the economy. And the problem with the increases in productivity as we're talking about them, the issue is when we get an increase in productivity, it's not a matter of squeezing something out. It's a matter of putting a robot in or a computer in where a person used to be. When we get that, it is the people at the bottom of the economic chain that are going to be hurt, unfortunately, because those are the people with the fewest marketable skills, by definition. And as a result of that, Walmart is going to suffer, and one could reasonably then expect the higher-end retailers to do better, and that's precisely what we're seeing going
on. Well, and let me reiterate something here. I've been agreeing with the caller on a lot of the subjects here. Mm-hmm. But there's a point that I have to bring up after all of this agreement. The headlines have said Walmart earnings disaster. That's the common thing.
I love that, yes. They're only up. They're up. They're yes, not down, so it's a disaster.
Their earnings of Walmart are up 2.4%. Now, it didn't meet analysts' expectations. So the price dropped of their stock. They're growing. So if it is a harbinger, then it's a harbinger of slow growth, which is what we're talking about. The fact that they are making more profit than they did before is something that is not in the headlines, but if you read into the story, you see, oh, well, yes, they're making more money. The reason why they didn't meet the analyst expectations was very, very clear. Now, there's some areas where, you know, I said produce, that's a minor issue. The major issue was that they had to pay more employment taxes. It's like everybody else in the nation. So once again, there's a governmental influence on private industry and so on. So again, coming back to the Federal Reserve, which doesn't influence the taxes, but does influence ease of money, I would actually like to see the Federal Reserve before toning back on QE3, actually pumping it up a little bit, because right now banks are not loaning money. There are very, very few loans going out from the banks, comparatively.
But the Federal Reserve, by lowering interest rates or pumping up QE3, isn't going to make banks loan more money. What's keeping banks from loaning more money is very, very simple. The fact that so many regulators got their noses bloodied because they missed a problem means that the regulators who get in there and check the banks, the bank examiners, are being really, really tough on the banks.
And I've got an exclusive
here. It's so much fun to beat up on the banks until you realize that puts people out of work.
Right. I've got an exclusive here, and this is something that I haven't seen anywhere else.
An exclusive
from us.
Okay.
QE3 is the reason why we have had housing starts go up, and the reason why at least 50% of the houses that were purchased in the past year were purchased. We have news now, it's very clear news, that says that half of the houses purchased in the past year were done with cash purchases.
Right.
QE3 is not giving money to banks. Some money to banks. Most of that money is going to individual people who are owning mortgage-backed securities that are in some form of distress. QE3 is designed to pump cash back into the economy. Well, that cash is turning around and buying houses. So this is very, very similar to the Obama stimulus, or the first Bush, or the second Bush of his administration stimulus,
except
the first one of this recession.
Right.
Instead of spending the money, people turned around and paid off debt. And in this case, instead of spending the money in a consumer way, with the money from the Federal Reserve coming in from QE3, they've turned around and not gotten a mortgage and instead bought a house.
Caller, I'm going to make a recommendation to you that might change your complete attitude. You ready for it? Are you still there?
I don't know if he's still there.
Maybe he's not.
Okay. There he is.
Okay.
There he is. You turned him down.
Okay. Get a subscription to The Economist magazine and read it for a year.
Read it for the last 25 years.
Good. Did you see the economic growth article? It's from the print edition. But the point is that they point out that the rest of the world, the whole global economy is finally returning back to growth, including Europe. But the article makes an interesting comment, and that is that the only of the large economies, the really big economies on the planet, there's only one that has a strong basis for belief, where they see a strong basis for belief for a sustained economic recovery, and that's the United States of America.
Been hearing that for a year, Jeff.
We've been recovering for a year. It's slow. And it is going to be slow, and again, this is a classic, absolutely classic recovery following a financial meltdown. The only thing we missed in between the two was the Depression and the war. And if you actually could go from 1929, you jump forward to post-World War II. The United States had run up a big debt. The economy, there's a lot of fear.
Government spending went through the roof.
Right, and there was a lot of fear that as the government wound down and all these people were released from the military, that there would be another depression as there had been after World War I. A lot of fear. And yet what that marked was the beginning of what's now referred to as the post-war recovery, the post-war boom, the post-war period, a period of amazing economic long-term growth. And we have positioned ourselves in the United States through the what's now called the Great Recession. We even had a war in the middle of it. I mean, we had a lot of the classic events occur. And if you go back and look at that historic moment, you find that unemployment did rise to a point that a lot of people were very uncomfortable. And what had happened is, in the process of the Depression and World War II, a lot of industries had automated and mechanized to a point that had never been seen before. So people coming back from the war could not go back and get their job digging ditches or whatever they were doing before.
They had to go and retool and re-educate.
And
they went to a re-education camp.
Right. And what we found is a lot of people taking advantage of government programs to go back to school. Well, actually, there's a really fascinating thing going on out there right now. And that is, a lot of people are taking advantage of government programs and going back to school. And yes, there's a lot of noise about unsustainable student debt, and there's a lot of argument in the Congress about student debt. The point is that the actual long-term data really, really, really strongly supports the fact that we are in a very long-term expansion in our economy. Does that mean that in the next 3 to 6 months anything might happen? No, not one way or the other. Because I've read so many studies, and every one of them agrees completely on one thing, that short-term attempts to guess what the market is going to do are a shortcut to miserable investment failure.
We can say in the near future we do expect to see a lot of bumpiness, because there's a lot of insecurity over what Congress is going to do, over what the Federal Reserve Chairman's going to be, who that's going to be, the sequester, the debt ceiling, and that's something else I wanted to talk about later.
But I'm concerned about what Congress. I'm concerned right now because the consensus among investors and traders and the professional investors is that the Republicans will not shut the government down. But the point is, I don't think they know. They certainly don't know that. They've discounted it and said, no, that's not going to happen. They're not dumb enough to do that. That's exactly, by the way, the terms that I read. I'm not at all convinced that the Republicans in the House of Representatives haven't reached the end of their patience. And anytime you have brinksmanship, there's a short-term risk. But long-term,
we're sitting right now. Right now, we're talking about the short-term risk real quick. We're sitting for how many days have we been at the debt ceiling? It's been
since May.
$38 million below the debt ceiling.
And they're just shuffling money around.
Well, it's not just shuffling money around. This is what because I was asked, how are they doing that? There's the Congressional Budget Office came out with a report saying that we spent $98 billion more than tax revenue in July, and yet the debt ceiling didn't move. The debt clock didn't go up. And I've had people say, well, how do they do that? There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there that, well, maybe the Treasury Secretary is doing something under the table.
He's
a really easy
answer.
He's got
a really good copy machine in his office, and he's copying $20 bills.
Okay. No, that's not what's going on. This is actually a fascinating area. What's happening here is TARP and QE3 is bringing in massive amounts of profit. It's very easy to see this outside of the Federal Reserve. UBS just finalized its payoff to the European Central Bank. Okay, this sounds like I'm talking about a completely different subject all of a sudden.
Right. Isn't that the delivery service, UBS?
Oh, no, I don't think so, no. So it is not Brown.
It's a huge Swiss bank,
yes.
By the way. It's not UPS, but UBS.
They just paid off the final payment to the European Central Bank for their big bailout during the Great Recession. What they're doing now is they're turning around and buying the assets that were stripped from them, these troubled assets that were stripped from them during the recession. They're buying them back because they're profitable now. Well, guess who they're buying them back from? So there's two sides of this. They're buying them back from the United States Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank. The European Central Bank got a whole bunch of money during the bailout time period from the United States Federal Reserve. So when UBS pays back the European Central Bank, they've got to turn around and pay back the U.S. Federal Reserve. Any profits that the United States Federal Reserve makes in its open market actions belong to the U.S. Treasury. They have made about $400 billion over the past year on troubled assets that they've been buying from QE1, QE2, QE3, and TARP. You throw all that stuff together and you think about that tax hike, the 39% tax hike that we were all concerned about last year. That was $67 billion, the difference to the budget. We're talking about $400 billion that came back in from this. So it's not just shuffling money around. The activities of the Federal Reserve, if Warren Buffett were doing those things, there wouldn't have been a time period at any point along the way that the people would have said, oh, that's really dumb. They would have said, oh, man, Warren Buffett sure is brilliant. So anyway,
no, actually,
that was my
Ben Bernanke. Sure,
yes,
brilliant.
Ben Bernanke. That's part of the reason why we look at how he did during all this time period. He got a lot of flack for the decisions that he made during the quotes, and I put these quotes around them because anybody that listened to us during the time period said I didn't think they were bailouts. I thought they were shark loans. He's making a massive amount of profit. This is very similar to how Bill Clinton balanced the budget by using proceeds from Reagan and the first Bush during the savings and loan scandal to come up with profits and balance the budget then. Now we're not hitting the debt ceiling because the government's made profits in areas that have nothing to do with taxes. Anyway, that was my quick and fairly exclusive moment.
That was an exclusive rant. It was very good, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Excellent.
I mean,
I won't keep you on.
Okay.
I'm going to get off the list of what you have to say. I called because I don't think we're in for a real happy time over what you call the short term.
Well, I think come fall, you're going to see a couple of things happen. The worry rate is going to go up. There is a distinct possibility of a sudden downturn in the market if the Republicans decide to go, we used to call it Harry Caray or kamikaze, now it's jihad.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that, it'll be short term. We're not going to shut the entire United States government down for an extended period of time. It's just not going to happen.
And there's one more prediction.
In a short time, they could do it, though.
I'm going to make another prediction.
What's that?
In autumn, you're going to see this, and you can write this down.
Can I get the rest of this?
I'll hit this, and then I'll hand it right back to you. You're going to see some leaves changing color as well.
Yes.
And that's very just
right.
To throw in that. Okay,
but
go ahead.
And at the tail end of all of that turmoil, you're going to see a typical seasonal run-up in the market in the last part of the year. Now, is any of that certain? No.
Oh, except for the leaves part. That's certain.
I don't know. We could get a sudden massive drought and all the leaves just fall off.
Well, they will change color at some point, even if they're on the ground.
Yeah,
yes,
but,
so it will happen.
You got it. So what we are, by the way, if you go back, and I have done this many, many times, this time of year, here in the dog days of August, is the highest level of pessimism I feel, the market feels, you name it. And it sometimes has sudden shocks in September and the beginning of October. But unless there is a fundamentally overpriced market, which it isn't by any stretch of the imagination, by the end of the year it's higher.
Well, you've answered my question.
Okay.
I appreciate the discussion. I have to tell you that I haven't changed my mind.
Oh, it's all right.
I always enjoy listening to you.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And the idea of changing minds is something. Didn't Frankenstein try that at some point?
By the way, I base this at least partially on the fact that in 1982, people were just as pessimistic as they are today about the future. And thoroughly so, and had lots of reasons being so, as the Dow Jones Industrial Average crept through 1,000 and then sagged back.
Yep, remember it well.
And it's a little higher today than it was then, so I think my optimism was relatively well-founded.
Did you just say myopic?
Could be.
My optimism. Yeah, okay,
thanks,
something.
Okay, talk to you
thanks
later.
For the call.
And we got to do some commercials. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And, you know, when people ask me my name, I go, Jeff.
And you wait.
And your voice. I just don't hear your voice, but they don't hear it.
I can just give you a recording if you would like. And you can carry it around when people ask you. It's better than a name tag anyway.
Good. I like that. That would be any better. We'll be back on the other side with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we probably need to put some bad news out.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to put it out like a fire, or are we going to put it out for public dissemination?
Put it out for public dissemination. How's that sound? Because, as the caller mentioned a few minutes ago, we tend to be optimists, and we have been criticized heavily for being optimists.
Well, it just depends on where you're looking. We're optimists right now about the stock market, but if you look at the bond market, we're not so optimistic. If you look at the real estate market, we're fairly optimistic.
But the bottom line to it is, as far as the economy is concerned.
As far as the economy, overall economy, we are optimists
right now. For a long-term investor, and there is a world of difference between a speculator and a long-term investor. But for a long-term investor, we are very optimistic about the United States economy. For that matter, I personally am very optimistic about the emerging markets economy. Not so much about Europe. But there's an area where I am very, I suppose you could say, pessimistic. And it has to do with fall. And since we're coming up on fall, I would say that. It has to do with rainfall. And there is an article in the Wall Street Journal, decade of drought threatens West, and it says that in Lake Mead, the Lower Colorado River Authority, the other one, the one that's over in the western United States, they are just a short ways at this point from declaring a water shortage, considering that the two major lakes they have out there are down, you know, like 20 or 30 feet and dropping, and that there's more water being pumped out of them every week than is flowing in. And they have to, at the same time, keep their turbines running to keep electricity going to California and some other places, so they have to have a certain amount of water that they just let out, is creating a problem because they have been waiting for the, quote, drought to end, end quote. I don't think the drought's ever going to end. There is an issue here, and that is when we look at the very long term, just as I look at the United States economy over the long term, and I'm very optimistic. I look at the European economy over the very long term, and I'm not optimistic at all. I'm pessimistic. They're not having enough children. They're not, they have decided to cut off their nose despite their face in several areas. And it's going to, if they ever recover from any of this, it will take a very long time. And I'm not at all sure it's going to happen. The Japanese are in the same position. Yes, they are suddenly resurgent, and they've had actual growth in their economy for the first time in a decade or so. But again, they just long-term are toast. Now, what am I pessimistic about the Western United States for? Because when you've got something that's literally been going on for over 1,000 years, which is a declining rainfall in the western United States, and particularly in the southwestern United States, it's probably, and it seems to be accelerating, the problem seems to be accelerating through the entire period. Unless something changes, I don't think that trend is going to change. You know, and it really boils down to the fact that there's a sector of our economy that is dependent upon having cheap water in the desert, including in West Texas and west of there, that is going to go away. And anybody who thinks it isn't is living in a dreamland.
If anybody is thinking that we're basing this on like the data on global warming or something like that, well, while that data is out there, what we're basing this on is very simple. The Sierra Nevadas are rising every year.
Yes.
And as they rise, the desert pushes eastward. If you go out to Big Bend in West Texas, and you read the historical documents held in museums there about what the place looked like, just 100 years ago, you'll find that it wasn't so much a desert. It's been moving eastward. And that dry line in my childhood was well west of I-35. It's moving east. It's almost up to I-35 mm-hmm. now. And that's a statement. And we talk about the drought being here, and it's been here for a long time. That's why it's here. The Sierra Nevadas are going up. It's blocking a lot of the a lot of the air that would have the impact on warm, moist air from the Gulf. It's pushing it further east.
Now, I want to emphasize that it amounts to the places that are dependent on the Pacific Ocean for water, for rain. Once we reach the point where the Gulf of Mexico is the prime generator of water for rain, no problem.
Yep, it's the dry line stops. Now, this is something you led to this, and you had no bidding from me to do it.
But I had no bidding?
Yes, we didn't discuss this at all.
There was no auction?
I'm going to bring Egypt into this discussion. Because there's a lot of turmoil going
on.
Now,
wait a minute. Egypt is to the east, not the west.
It's very, very far to the east. It has nothing to do with our dry line. However, just like Tunisia and Libya and Syria and Egypt all had wheat prices at the base of the Arab Spring, which is not talked about in the media. They talk about democracy and freedom and all of that. But when wheat prices go up so that bread prices go up, so that people go out on the street and have bread riots, if you look at the person who self-immolated in Tunisia, the first of the Arab Spring, it was a bread merchant. The bread riots that followed after that led to the democratic changes. What we're seeing right now in Egypt has other very strong reasons for it, not because of a democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood president. It was Ethiopian water rights to the Nile. This is something that is the number one priority to the Egyptian military. If Ethiopia continues with its plan on a $4.7 billion dam of the Nile to produce power and other things, the economy of Egypt will shatter. The military of Egypt, the self-proclaimed protectors of the spirit of Egypt. Well, you can that's the translation, the spirit of Egypt. Well, look back at the historical references to the Nile and what they call it. They call it the spirit of Egypt. So keep that in mind when we're looking at the democratic freedom-oriented thing going on. The media is going to cover that area, and they say freedom of speech. They're talking about protests, and they're talking about a democratically elected person coming down. And they're saying, why is it that Obama is still funding the Egyptian military? Because when the military saw that the political arm was not willing to defend the water rights of Egypt, which is the lifeblood of Egypt, they stepped in. I mean, if you think about how long the protests were going and such before the military stepped in, it was only after further negotiations with Ethiopia that Morsi was removed. So, anyway, that's, again, things that are a little bit below the surface.
Very, very below.
I mean, we're talking about...
and it's a matter of there are some very, very, very long-term trends going on in the world. And those trends ultimately shape the economies of the world. And the bumps along the way may be uncomfortable. They may cause people to panic. But if you'll think about one of the analogies I really like to use, and that is along the beach, the waves going in and out, trying to forecast the short-term waves going in and out on the beach. If you haven't ever done this, I would encourage you to go make a try. You will find you can't. Very, very sophisticated computer programs cannot forecast how high up the beach a given wave will go. It just can't be done. It's truly, over an extended period, a random process. But the tides are very predictable. And when the tide is coming in, we can say the waves may go in and out. Any given wave may be bigger or smaller than the last wave, may go further up or further down than the last wave. But over time, the waves will gradually get higher if the tide is coming in. How do we know if the tide's coming in? Well, there's obviously the sun and the moon and the tidal charts. You also look at the debris on the beach and see just exactly how high the water level is compared to where it typically goes. And we can make some very, very, very accurate predictions that so many hours from now the waves will be reaching a higher point or will be reaching a lower point. And that's what we work from. And it's very, very easy when you see a series of waves that seem to be taking the water level further down, and that happens along the beach, even when the tide's coming in. But if the tide's coming in, the tide's coming in. If it's going out, it's going out. That's one of the great economic discoveries of the world. And the reason I say that is, in order to do shipping, literally with ships, around the world, which spurred international commerce and made England the economic powerhouse that it ultimately became, the first thing that had to be understood was the tides. Because if you load a ship up with a lot of goods, you not only want to catch the tide as it's going out if you have a sailing ship, but you want to catch it where it's deep enough that you don't hit the reef on the way out. Crossing the bar is an interesting concept, but there is a bar, a shallow reef, if you will, outside every harbor. And the ability for us to understand that the long-term trends are more important than the short-term events.
The waves are less important than the tide.
That's the secret of why Northern European economic thought has dominated the world. Northern European economic civilization has dominated the world. We call that a socioeconomic system. And it's because we realize that the long-term trends are more important than the short-term events.
And then the reason why the United States as a whole, that socioeconomic system that grew out of that, has been so successful is because they've incorporated the successes of all the other socioeconomic systems. They keep that as a core long-term, but all of the short-term successes that are in all these other cultures get incorporated into it as well. We truly are a melting pot. Most other systems are locked into their cultural heritage. If we're not careful, that could happen to us.
And, you know, to a little bit of an address to the caller who called earlier, the vote internationally, and I like the economic vote internationally, can be seen relatively clearly. Despite the fact that we as a country, as an economic entity, have taken a very, very, very serious approach to getting the value of the dollar down against other currencies so we can sell our goods and services in a competitive fashion, the dollar is rising. It has been rising for some time, despite the best efforts of the Federal Reserve and so on. The Treasury security interest rate is rising. As a matter of fact, and it's certainly not any world record, but it rose again this last week significantly, which is a very, very strong indicator, despite the fact QE3 has not backed off even a little bit, and one of the most influential Fed governors made a speech that said, we need to have a lot more, Bullock made this speech, and we need to have a lot more data before we even consider trailing off QE3.
It's pretty much what I was saying earlier in the hour.
But the interest rate on treasuries went up. Why did the interest rate on treasuries grow up? Because there is a consensus that the United States economy will be more healthy in the future, that borrowing demand will rise into the future. Now, where is that consensus coming from? I don't know. But I do know it's there, and a lot of it, this is amazing, a lot of it is from outside the United States. Meanwhile, U.S. investors continue to pull money out of bond funds rather quickly, put money into money market funds intensely. There's like $5 trillion in money market funds right now. I mean, I think that's absurd, but that's okay.
Well, that's part of the reason why the bond rates are rising is because less money is going towards them.
But then... The people are also putting a lot of money into equity funds. But this is an interesting thing to me. American investors are investing far more money in overseas funds than they are in U.S. funds, while foreign investors are investing more money in U.S. funds than they are in overseas funds.
It's a nice little swap going with that.
And it's just one of those little strange things that's going on. Basically, long-term, we're in great shape. Short-term, we're due for some bumps. Everything I see confirms that. I don't see anything that points in the other direction.
While you were saying earlier that I will reiterate rather than try to rephrase. The United States Congress has a debt ceiling that it hasn't raised in a while, and it needs to raise it. It does need to raise it because there are obligations that we were put under by the same Congress that's not raising the debt ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to cut the budget, let's cut the budget. Don't get me wrong here. I think that's a good idea. Let's cut the budget. Let's not do it in a random, haphazard, no leadership way of sequester. And let's not do it with this thing saying, I know we obligated you to pay this money, but you're not allowed to pay the money with the debt ceiling. Let's be reasonable. I realize that it may be an oxymoron when we're talking about Congress.
You just said something that makes
Congress,
no sense in Congress.
Reasonable. No, I mean...
You know, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know.
Congress is unreasonable, but I'm being redundant there.
Yeah. I guess that is a bit of a
just should have just stopped at Congress.
But across the economy, what we are seeing is a great deal of rationality, which is a little bit strange to consider. But there is a great deal of rationality. Yes, the primary growth right now, by the way, in the real estate market is in multifamily housing, not in single family housing. Why? Because there's a lot of people out there who recognize they probably ought to be renting rather than buying a house because they need to be mobile in an economy where technology is erasing jobs.
Yeah, what we've just discovered in the Great Recession is
they need to not be locked into a spot.
Get locked into an obligation for 30 years and your job changes, you might have an issue. Now, if you're ready for retirement and you know this is the place you're going to be, then that's a great decision.
Go ahead.
Well, we're almost out of time. That's all I was going to say.
And if you are interested in making some comments off the air or you want to contact us in any way off the air, you're certainly welcome to do so. We have voicemail locally at 947-1111. It's the Personal Wealth Coach at 947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free, again, voicemail at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, and listen to our podcast.
And we have another hour of this. We'll probably be playing replays for the next 2 weeks because we're actually going on vacation. It's a little scary thing to do. But until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.